Session number 12232, Mr. Ivor Watkins, Reel 7.
Mr. Watkins, Reel 7. We're talking about when you were in the line around the Fleur Bay, Bois Grenet area, and you mentioned the sniping post. Was there a lot of sniping going on by...
A sniper would come up at night, and he'd be in the iron tree, we found out after, and that was his sniping post. And he'd depart then early in the morning. That was his post, and we found out, being nosy parkers in a way, when we were moving about from one part of the line to the other, that this was a sniper's post in the iron tree.
Would you lot do any sniping?
No, it'd be specialist sniper.
Was there a risk of German snipers? Did they do much?
Oh, always a risk that there'd be a couple of pings now and again, and a traverse of machine gun fire, because on Auber's Ridge in front of Lille, he always had sausages coming up, observation balloons, see? Observation balloons here and there, up on Auber's Ridge, and they were targets for some of the flying machines, the Royal Air Force then, or Royal Flying Corps in that time, Ryan Flying Corps. I have seen a sausage being brought down on Auber's Ridge by one of the biplanes, the Royal Flying Corps.
What could you see?
Well, you'd see the sausage there, and all of a sudden it'd be disintegrated.
It just blew up?
Well, it didn't blow up, it just flop, like that.
Deflated.
Deflated, and down it came. Goes a hell of a way away there, you see. But that observation ridge there, Auber's Ridge, they could look back, right back towards Merville and those places, you see, which were behind us. But on the whole, it was a comparatively quiet part of the line as far as bang, but still there was activity completely all the time. Patrols, that sort of thing.
Was there ever any raids?
On our part, yes. But there may have been raids further up the line, because the line extended miles.
Yes. On your part, there weren't?
On our part, our couple of hundred yards.
No raids?
We made raids, but...
You did?
Yes.
What do you remember about that? How was it organised?
Well, you were detailed off for a raid. You were told what you were after. The patrols that had gone out before would give you some indication of the depth of the wire, whether there was any break in the wire or anything like that. See? You'd have your details, and we were primed on that. And off you'd go at night then and creep. Sometimes, well, I don't remember ever getting into a German trench, but we played hell with their wire.
How?
Well, pulled up the pickets, let them know we were there, that sort of thing, and fired some rounds of rifle fire, then bugged off back then, as quick as you could. Disturbing then, shall I say. Disturbing.
But it wasn't the sort of raid to go into the trench to take a prisoner?
Oh, no. I never experienced that myself.
But so more like a fighting patrol?
Fighting patrols, disturbing, letting Jerry know we were there, that anything could happen at any time, that we were able to get as far as his wire without him knowing, you see? It was that sort of element, that letting him know, well, anything could happen, they got as far as this, the next time perhaps they'll come in, see? It kept them on their toes. Wasn't allowing them to be fast asleep all the time.
Was there anything else you did?
When we were in the line?
At Bois Grenoble, yes, in Fleurbay.
Well, there were a lot of activities when we came out of the line.
All right. So, what? Just one thing. Had any lice started during that time?
Yes, yes.
And what were they?
In that particular period, we'd have a change of clothes. See? Have a change of shirts, underpants. And then within about 3 or 4 days, you could feel the itch. Then we had to cram up and be careful that we weren't caught with our shirt off. So there'd be so many crumbing up in a little corner somewhere in the traverse, while the others kept an eye, because if you were caught with your shirt off, you were not prepared to fight. But then you'd follow the seams of your shirt up and just crack them.
Between your nails?
Between the nails, see? That was it.
So it was an officer. If an officer had come along while you had your shirt off, you'd be in trouble.
Well, what the hell are you doing? You're not prepared to fight, you see? So
would an NCO be the same, or...?
Well, it all depends what rank the NCO would be. If he was a corporal, he may be a little bit tolerant. He may have to do the same thing himself. See, at some time or another. But the main thing is that the whole section weren't crumbing up and not be in a position to defend or attack. I remember one fellow, somewhere or other, he got up out of some creosote. I don't know whether he brought it into line or he found it somewhere, and he soaked his shirt in that and dried it and put it on, and by God, he didn't have to dance after, because there were little pimples on your... where you've been scratching, you see? And that irritated him. Never again. Never again.
Did you try any powders, ketones or anything?
Well, we didn't have any. Didn't have any. We had to grin and bear it and try and keep yourself as clean as you could.
What about using a lighted match or a cigarette or anything? Did you use
that? Well, some did go to that, but you had to be careful you didn't burn the damn shirt or burn your shirt. Or anything like that, but we used any means. The easiest was just cracking them between your thumbnails like that. They didn't mind who you were. It didn't matter your rank or anything.
Were they very irritating? I mean,
they were irritating. You know, they'd get get a little bit of blood from you. The other pest there, of course. It was not trenches, they were mostly earthworks. Well, the duck boards were there, you see, and water flowed under the duck boards. Now, the rats would urinate in that water, and you had to be careful to keep your feet as dry as you could, because the urinating rat would get the water in such a state that perhaps you may have trench feet, you see. If you got a lot of wet feet. So, in fact, then, when we came out of the line for our number of 5 or 6 days, we weren't left there to rest. We either had to go clearing ditches out for the main drainage, see? There would be, getting wire up, stores up to certain vantage points, ready to be taken up by the night. It may be that a telephone line had to be laid under the auspices of the Royal Engineers, cross land, and the Royal Engineers then, they would insist on you going down 6 feet. And then there was an argument then with there was some of the fellows watching the Royal Engineers, you know, stepping out the number of feet you had to. And some fellows say, "Good God, look at his bloody great boots." If a fellow had size 7s, see, it wasn't too bad. But if a fellow had 10s or 11s, he'd have that foot or so extra to dig down, you see. But we had to get down. Didn't matter how narrow it was at the bottom, start that way. But so long as you went down 6 feet for the cable to go down, so that it was pretty safe from any shell fire, you see. And we were allowed sometimes of straying, shall we say, a quarter of a mile from our camp outside. We'd go around, a few of us found a farm not very far away where we could get eggs and chips, see? So we'd creep out there the night and knock the door, and madam or the deuxer, fabric pomme de terre, s'il vous plaît. We come inside then, franc and a half, we'd have two eggs and chips. That was a proper feast. But that didn't happen very, very often. It's when we had, shall we say, a day off from actual working during our time out of the trenches.
Where would you stay during your time out of the trenches?
Well, we stayed in one place in a farm. That was the company headquarters at that time, I think. And then we slept in the farm buildings.
About how far back would you be from the line?
Well, maybe about 2 or 3 miles back.
So would you still be under shell fire occasionally?
Well, on long range, yes. Long range, yes. But it was a quiet part of the line. Comparatively quiet, you see.
So there wasn't much shelling anywhere, never mind 2 or 3 miles.
Not a lot of shelling then behind the line at that particular time we were there.
And would they go back to spit and polish again?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. There was the guard room in this farm, and the guard was posted there every night. A bugler was there, perhaps a staff officer that I was telling you about, the staff officer and the brigadier there. They would they'd turn out the guard and that sort of thing, you see. Oh, yes, they're still back to the drill then. Well, we were out of the line on guard duty then. There would be a guard posted in battalion or company headquarters. See? Still kept to that.
And would you go, I mean, the farm was sort of like, did it serve wine as well? Was there anywhere where you could go for a drink?
Well, no. We couldn't get any vin ordinaire or anything like that. Not unless we had, shall we say, 3 or 4 days, or we had a pass to go to Merville then, or a pass to go to Estaires while we were out of the line. Then we could get...
What would you do when you went to one of those then?
We would have then the big thing was egg and chips, you see, dessert avec pomme de terre. And then we'd have a bottle of vin blanc or vin ordinaire, which is like vinegar in any case. To me, it was horrible stuff. The other thing that we could get was bock beer. And that was like water. Bock beer. I remember that name now. Bock beer. And vin ordinaire, vin blanc.
And would you drink in moderation? I mean...
Well, I was never a heavy drinker or anything like that. I'd have my glass of wine or a glass of beer and that was it.
Sounds like the egg and chips was more important
to
you.
Oh, yes, the egg and chips was very, very important. And I remember that. Dessert, s'il vous plaît. Pain de beurre? Oui, pain de beurre. Bit of bread and butter. But I believe if these farming people were caught, you know, giving us that food, they may have been prosecuted, I don't know. But on the whole, they were very good.
Would you get, when you went into, say, Merva, would you buy more than that, or was it still just egg and chips?
No, we wouldn't buy any more than that. Just egg and chips.
And what else would you do in Merville?
Well, have a look around. There wasn't much, because we had to get back, you see. We didn't stop there by night. I remember going to Merville to see a football match, a rugby match. And that's about the only time... I stayed there any length of time, but we had to get back to camp by night.
Would you see much of the French civilians?
Not a lot. Not a lot. Not a lot.
What did you think of those you saw?
Well, if I may speak plainly, I recognised the French more so than the Belgians. Because the Belgians were two. There were the Walloons and the Flemish, see? They were slightly different. We met that two-part battalion when we were going up after the war.
Did you like the French, or?
Well, we had to accept them. We didn't have a lot to do with them, really, you see. Didn't have a lot to do, only in this farm where they were, I don't know. But we didn't see a lot of French moving about. There may be the odd farmer trying to plow his field and that sort of thing.
Did you think they profiteered from you at all?
I don't think so. Franc and a half was a pretty good value for deserve avec pomme de terre and pain de beurre, as they say. That little phrase rolled frequently off the tongue, you know, got used to it.
Now, your billets when you're out of the line, where would you sleep? I mean,
well, when we were at company headquarters, we'd sleep in a farm building, whether it be a stables, a pigsty or anything that was dry enough.
And you'd just sleep on the floor?
Sleep on the floor with a blanket covering us. That's it. Good, it was nice and warm, and that was it. You kept warm because you didn't take off a lot of clothes in case you'd be cold all of a sudden, you see.
Because you were still in, you're only 2 miles back.
About 2 or 3 miles back, that's all. That's all. Yes. Fleur Bay, Bois Grenade. The Portuguese came to us a little later on when we were there. The Portuguese came into the line.
What impression did you have of them?
Well, they were always covered in a blanket, and it's difficult to speak disparagingly of an ally. But if Jerry opened fire, heavy fire, they'd come back. And we had to go up and get their equipment the following morning. They were temperamental. I'm not blaming them, they were temperamental. And I believe it was a weak part of the front there. Because right along that front, Jerry broke through in 1918 on the big offensive then, which I didn't experience because I was home in Blighty. Yeah. Then after we moved from Fleur Bay, Bois Grenier, I went to an NCO's school for 2 weeks.
Where was that at?
Now, I can't remember the name, but I've shown you the book, haven't I?
An infantry drill book.
An infantry drill book, where I suppose that later on I'd be made up to a lance corporal, I suppose. That's why I was sent there. And we had a fortnight there, severe drill, company drill, and that sort of thing. We had to drill our compatriots then, under the supervision of the sergeant major then. He was in charge, an Irishman, Regimental Sergeant Major Flavin. And he could never say attention, he always would say Tien. I always remember that. Tien! Never attention, Tien! And he could belt it out as well. But we had a fortnight there. And which was a change.
Was it just drill that you were learning, or would they teach you tactics and things like that?
Not actually tactics, drill. Drill. Which was the basis of obeying orders. I've come to realise now in my later days.
You mentioned, yes.
The basis of obeying orders, do what you were told without, shall we say, argument or question.
Did you take to it? Were you able to? I mean, you.
Yes, I did. I took to it like a duck takes to water.
So you were able to give the command?
Yes,
as well as
I was. And I was always gifted with a good. Watkins, sir, you have a damn good voice. And that's it, you see. I always remember that. Sir, always sir, you see. And I always say about regimental sergeant majors, their battalion was their God, and God help anybody who questioned that. The company sergeant major, his company was his company. The regiment of Sergeant Major, his battalion was his battalion. And God help anybody who said anything about it. Had to be the best.
There were characters in the 15th,
oh,
were there?
Oh, dear, yes, they were characters. The way they strided with their stick for measuring the paces, you know. That was under the arm there. But they were characters.
There were good NCOs in the 15th, were there?
Yes, very good. Very good.
What about your officers? Were they good?
Yes, I didn't meet a lot of them. I met Puggy Daniels.
Who was he?
Well, he was a company commander. The adjutant, Captain Ayres. He wrote to me some time ago. He thought he was the only survivor of the 15th Welsh who went over Pilcombe Ridge. And he visited the regimental museum in Cardiff Castle, and the curator told him, he said, "I don't think you are." He put him in touch with the veterans officer, Harold Evans, and Harold Evans told him, "You're not the only one. There's a chap living down in Swansea by the name of Ivor Watkins." And he wrote to me, Colonel Ayres, he's 95. And I wrote back to him, but I didn't get any reply. So there were two of us veterans of Pilcombe Ridge, of the 15th Battalion, that we know of.
And did you think the officers had better living conditions than you did, or did you think they...
Well, obviously they had their batmen, but when they were up in the line with us, they had to put up with what we put up with, you see? But they'd come round in the night, one officer, along with the company sergeant major, with your little ration of rum. Rations came up in a better way than it did up in Ypres, you see? There was the tank of tea carried on the back, you see? And you had a decent ration. But you'd have your little tot of rum.
How was it issued?
Every night. Well, you had the lid of your Dixie, you see? And they'd have the jar, and they'd give you that. Now, a lot of people were under the impression that you were given rum to make you mad, you know, to build up your ego. But I learned over the years that was not the case. The rum was given to keep your tummy warm during the night. That was my version, to keep your body warm over the night. Obviously, some thought it was otherwise, but we never had enough to get any ego or drunk, you see. But one thing about it, the sergeant major and the officer would say, "Well, we might well have ours now," you see. And I remember the occasion where two particular persons stole a jar of rum. They were dead by the following morning. They drank so much that they regurgitated and killed themselves. I remember looking at them, and they were as white as marble, their faces. White as marble. Strange. But I always think that the SRD rum ration was to sustain the warmth in your tummy.
That's how it worked for you as well.
With me, during the night. But I didn't like it that much.
Did you smoke?
Not then. I smoked after I had the dose of mustard gas.
What about, what did you do with your cigarette ration then? Or did you get it?
Well, more than all, I may have smoked one, but I didn't make a habit of smoking.
Would you give it to your friends then?
Yes, I remember having one of those cigarette lighters. Was a long piece of wick, and you had that burnt on top, and the spark would just put a little spark, then you had to blow it then to bring an ember, and you'd lit your cigarette from there. But it had a hell of an effect on the throat, though. That's the only... Speaking, I didn't smoke, and yet I had one, perhaps, or something like that, but not an avid smoker.
You said you got tea brought up there, you know.
Yes, yes.
In these quieter trenches. Would you get other hot food at all?
No. Not while you were in the trenches.
So you'd still be on the bully beef and...
Yes.
The rations were the same as at Pashtun? They just came up
plain.
Better.
You got bully beef, you may get a tin of pork and beans, you may get a tin of McConaughey, you see, and that sort of thing.
How did your health stand up to it, though?
Very good.
Did you have any problem with dysentery or constipation?
No, I didn't.
Did you use the whale oil on your feet?
Not then. Later on, we were using whale oil. Later on the march up into Germany, we were using whale oil.
So, what was that? You went from Boys Grenoble.
I went to that NCO school.
And yes, where were they when you came back from?
Well, they had gone on, obviously, towards Hooplines, because that was the next place I remember.
That's near
Armentier. I will try to find Hooplines on the map, but there was a little town. I remember there was a railway station there, and that's where I remember where I got to after I left the NCO school. That would be in the beginning of March 1918.
So how long in all had you been at the Boys Grenoble area? You must have been there quite a while.
We were there quite a while. We were there March, February. I remember having Christmas on that part of the line.
Did you have any sort of Christmas celebration?
We did have a bit of a Christmas celebration. I remember we were out of the line at that time, and we were at a farm. We were building it at a farm. We did have a bit of Christmas pud, but nothing excessive at all. We may have had a bit of extra ration, but not excessive at all.
So how long before then had you been in the Boys Grenoble area?
Boys Grenoble, well, we'd been December. There since we came down from Ypres.
And when would that have been, roughly?
July, maybe from August. Till the following August, the end of August, till the following March, February.
So 6 or 7 months?
Yes, there. Yeah, 6 or 7 months there. Difficult to hit on a date, but obviously we had Christmas there.
Was there anybody in the battalion who was suffering from battle fatigue or whatever, you know, self-inflicted wounds?
No,
stress?
I tell you, we had quite a few fellows who had been in the Metz, who had returned to the battalion while we were at Fleur Bay. That's what I mentioned earlier on. We had that Italian sergeant, Sergeant Grassi, I think his name was.
What was he like?
Well, he was very, very good. Very good. Good sergeant. He wasn't in our platoon. But I remember his name coming back. Obviously, he may have been living in, had an ice cream shop in the Rhondda Valley or some Welsh town like that, you see, and joined the Welsh regiment. There were quite a few fellows returning to the battalion after the Mametz duel, you see.
So they'd been away about a year and a half.
Well, no, July, you see. July 1916. About a year and a couple of months they'd been away, you see. No doubt they'd been wounded or ill after the Mametz duel and returned to the battalion.
Were they ready for some more, or did you...
Well, I never asked them. Obviously, they joined the battalion, but I left all the 15th behind me after March the 16th, where we got to Hooplines.
Hang on a minute. Just one thing. While you were in the line, or while you were out of the line, did you get parcels from home and letters?
Letters.
Did you write as well?
Oh, yes, I wrote. I was a good letter writer. I got my father kept all the letters. I got some letters. My sister had letters I wrote while I was in France.
What would you write about?
Well, everything is all right. Keeping well. That's all you could put down. You see, you had your field postcard and the occasional letter. You had to be careful. One fellow tried to put down on his letter in Welsh, "My braich and wilod, my arm is in tears." "Oh, my arm is crying." Tried to put down, he was near arm and tears. "See, my braich and wilod." But it, of course, it didn't come off because the censor, no doubt, you see. But he had a bash at that. All sorts of things getting wrong. When we were out of the line in Fleur Bay, there were always the fellow who wanted to flog something or scrounge something. I remember one chappie, he had a broken pocket watch. And back in the line where we were on working party, we come across a Chinese labour corps. And he wanted to raise the latch. He tried to flog this broken pocket watch to the Chinese labour corps. And I remember he was telling us about it after. "What did they say, Tap?" "Oh," he said, "no bloody bonny la, no bloody goody la." So at last he got fed up and he threw the watch up into the air. And he said, "It was one damn big rugby scrub to come and scrub to try and get it. They wouldn't buy it off him, but once he threw it up in the air, they all wanted it." Well, I say, you find that type, the scrounger.